So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review.
It's rare on a pay-per-view card where people forecast that one of two or three matches, maybe more, has a legitimate chance of being the match of the year. You got to know that everybody on the card wants to steal the show and get noticed and move up the ladder where they can make more money. They can take better care of their family. So that how the each guy performs on this show is going to be sensational. I hope that the good Lord guarantees me I get through January 4th, and I'll be 63 by that time. January 3rd is my birthday. So what I'm going to do is there will be a birthday celebration. It's going to be a celebration of my career. It's going to be a celebration of going back in time and getting that feeling back of really, I mean, bearing down, sweating through my suit, calling a pro wrestling match. And that's what brought me to the dance. And I can't wait till January 4th. I'll do my best to entertain you. They play the music in the ring. They make music. I'm going to give them a lyric that I hope you remember for a long time to come.
You ready when you come? I'm ready when you come. I'm ready. Now everywhere I go, they like hold back. About the corner office, out your cul-de-sac. Where's Iceberg Slim? He was the coldest cat. Get your swag back, daddy. Where your focus at? Gotta admit a little.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a special edition. It is the first ever preview away. I am John Pollock. Wei Ting is not with us today, though he will be around for our interview with Jim Ross, which is coming up. But it's my pleasure to welcome the man you hear every single month on Japanese Audio Wrestling. They are Chris Charlton and W.H. Park. To me, the two most capable people of breaking down Wrestle Kingdom 9, which is coming up this weekend. Chris, W.H., thanks so much for joining us, and happy holidays over there.
Happy holidays to you, John.
Yeah. Merry Christmas.
Chris, how was Christmas, especially you being one with a young child?
Oh, Christmas is great when you got kids. I like Christmas anyway. I'm more on your side than Wei's side. But yeah, when you've got kids, like, there's more kind of energy to it. But I mean, it sucked because my wife was working, because it's a normal day here. So it was just me and him. It was like, oh, we just hang around in the house for a lot of the time. But yeah, presents and all that good stuff, being in the kitchen. No, I love Christmas.
WH, you will love this. For Christmas, Jason Agnew got me the official J.R. Ewing bourbon that they sell in the United States.
It's amazing.
4 years old, 80 proof.
80 proof.
This 80 proof. Just like the man himself, J.R. Ewing.
I cannot wait to see the pictures come up on Facebook at some point.
Oh man, I don't even know if I'll open. I don't even drink bourbon, but I might have to start with this. It's like the most beautiful bottle here. You even have South Fork at the back of the bottle. It's quite the spectacle here.
I have a quick question to ask. Like, your obsession with Dallas, does it extend to the Dallas spinoff, Knott's Landing?
You know what? I've never gotten into Knott's Landing. My mom used to watch it religiously, and I always thought I would eventually get into Knott's Landing, but never did. Never ever sampled Knott's Landing with Gary, the brother. Were you a Knott's Landing viewer?
No, I was more of a Dynasty fan, actually.
Ah,
I was a big Aaron Spelling primetime drama fan, actually.
Oh, there you go. Well, Aaron Spelling has nothing on this card coming up at the Tokyo Dome. A terrible segue. But for those of you listening, you'll be aware, Chris is going to be going to the show live. WH is going to be watching it on New Japan World. And then next week, they're doing a full review of the show with our own Dan Lavransky, who's going to be watching the North American version, which will have the English commentary with Jim Ross and Matt Stryker. WH, was this just scheduling? You weren't able to go live? Or was this a show that maybe you just weren't interested in going to live?
More along the lines of, I have to save money because I'm changing apartments, so I had to lay a lot of cash. So I did want to go, but I had to weigh, like, other plans and spending money for this. I think actually it's turning out really well. Like, Chris is going to have the live experience. I'm going to have the New Japan World experience, and Mouth will have, like, the pay-per-view experience. So I think it's a good way for all of us to kind of talk about, like, the different aspects of watching it.
Yeah, I think it's great that you'll have kind of all angles covered. And as well, to your point, WH, like, it's never been easier now, especially for people outside of Japan, with the New Japan World option. What have your impressions been? We'll start with you, WH, on New Japan World. I think the service, I haven't had any problems with it. I just watched the both Cork and Hall shows over the past week. It's just the streaming quality's excellent. And now if you don't want to go out to a live show, I mean, there's going to be something like 5 or 6 New Japan shows you can watch in January on the service alone. It's incredible.
I think it's a great service, like, in terms of, like, the ease of which you can use it. Like, they have an English option on it that's, like, you'd have to be a complete moron not to be able to navigate. At least if you don't speak Japanese, just switch it to English. It's no problem. Or use Google Translate. It's so easy. I like a lot of the archive stuff. Like, I'm a big classic New Japan fan, as you know, like, especially the 90s stuff. So I've been watching a lot of, like, Shinjiro Otani stuff, a lot of Hashimoto stuff. And going back to the 80s, I've been watching actually a lot of Dick Murdoch stuff because I love Dick Murdoch. It's amazing. I think, like, the streaming quality is just flawless, in my opinion. Like, I watched the Korakuen shows, most of the Korakuen shows, and I watched the finals of the World Tag League show, which is a really nice show as well. I'm excited for, like, catching, like, the Power Struggle show. I think is that coming from Osaka? They're going to do it from Osaka Joe Hall, which is, I think, maybe the first time they've ever been there, maybe. Or they haven't been there in a long, long time. I'm looking forward to that. I'm definitely looking forward to G1 in August, but I don't know when I'm going to find the time to watch all those, because it's not my job to watch wrestling, so I got to make time between my real job and doing this. So we'll see what happens, but I think you can't beat the value. It's like the best value for wrestling fans in the world right now.
Can you believe, Chris, that, you know, the G1 is going to be $9 in August? And also, your thoughts on New Japan World. Have you got it yet?
Yeah, it's great value. I've watched the Korakuen shows both live on World and didn't have any issues, so that's a good sign. I think it's one thing I said, I mentioned it on Twitter the other day, like, I was looking at it, because the first thing I did was I watched all the other Wrestle Kingdoms, because I hadn't seen one, and I was like, okay, well, I might as well watch all of these. And then that took a couple of weeks, and then I was like, what should I watch next? And you go on the website, and just on the homepage, there's recommended, these are the recommended documentaries, these are the matches we've just put up, and then here's a bunch of blogs with recommendations here. Like, here are Tanahashi's best Tokyo Dome matches. Here are whatever. Here are, like, the best January the 4th matches, according to one guy. And that's so much better. I had the WWE Network for a couple of weeks, and you go on that, and it's like, what do I watch?
You have no idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really look at, man, New Japan World, it feels like it's just such a, you know, it's such a basic service, but I mean, so many little things that, I mean, I look at the WWE Network programming schedule, and this thing that just irked me this past week was just, I was looking at the schedule, and I think it was on Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, just to see if they put any, like, kind of thematic programming on it, and it's just nothing. It's like Total Divas, and then we're on to the next countdown show. It's like, this just feels like a robot is programming this network. There's no rhyme or reason to why this goes here. It's just tons of replay programming of the new stuff they're putting in there. It's just, you know, little things like that that just drive me nuts. Yeah, New Japan World, it's been a lot of fun just to go back and watch a lot of different stuff and keeping up with the current stuff, which I'm really looking forward to. As we get into this card, for those with New Japan World, you will get to see the 15-man New Japan Rumble, which, if you're a TNA fan, they love this match. Just the idea of a clock and mystery entrance. It just drove them.
It's a gauntlet match.
Yeah.
Right.
That's it. The infamous TNA gauntlet match. We have 15 men here. The question, Chris, is will you be arriving in time to watch the 15-man New Japan Rumble? Is this a priority for you to make it to the Dome in time to be there to get all of the entrances?
Yeah, I will, because there's a buffet place like near the Tokyo Dome where we'll go for lunch. There's like, we might as well go in after that. But yeah, also, like, if you're on New Japan World, the Battle Royal's 15 minutes, you know, 15 people in it. But if you want, you can watch I think it's 2 hours, the pre-show on World.
I am looking forward to watching the construction of the Tokyo Dome set that they will be bringing on New Japan World.
Oh,
live.
Amazing. Okay, yeah. I think they did that last year as well. I think they did that on Ustream. But I might check in on that on my way up. I'm looking forward to this in a kind of daft way. I almost think they haven't announced names in particular, but like they did say during the first match of the Korakuen Hall that both the young boys that they're pushing, like Shota Tanaka and Yohei Komatsu, are both going to be in it. I wouldn't be all that surprised if they gave it to Shota Tanaka, because like he's a guy that's now, you know, I think it's, they feel like he's ready, he's got a look, he's got a haircut. So I think he's a guy that, you know, and his showings have been really strong, him and Komatsu both, but you know, I think, Tanaka's got a good look to him. I wouldn't be surprised if he won it and then like that's his kind of entry onto the main card kind of thing.
But Chris, which one has the one knee pad, Tanaka or Komatsu?
Oh shit. Yeah. I think I said that. Komatsu has knee pads, but Tanaka has
okay. Then he's winning it. Whoever's got the knee pad is getting the fucking push.
See, longevity. You know, he's been watching Muda and Kobashi. He knows knee pads all the way, man.
To do with it. The young lion who gets like additions to their gear. Like they start with the trunks and the boots. When it's, oh, okay, you can wear tape now. Oh, you get a knee pad. You get two knee pads. That's who's getting the push. That's how it works.
Maybe for the big Dome show, one of them is going to come down with some extra wrist tape. And that will be the true sign of the chosen young lion.
That's one thing that Vince Russo never did was like the reverse mask match where the winner gets a mask and that's his character.
Oh, that's true. That's true. A lost opportunity with Willow earlier this year, I guess. On our worst of show on Sunday night, I stated that the worst wrestler of the year was Manabu Nakanishi. Would you agree with that statement? I preface that on the fact that the great Kali is largely inactive at this point in his career. And I have such a hard time watching this man. He's about to turn 48 years old and I watch him and I feel for this man.
I'll have to disagree with that. He's not like, he's limited. He knows it. He plays his role well. Like he doesn't strive to be anything more than what he actually is, which is like a veteran put out there to entertain like the long-term fans that want to see him in Nagata in matches. He's not the worst wrestler. I have wrestlers I despise more than him.
Like, well, we know your affinity for Yoshihashi, which maybe would have been on your list. He's probably going to be in this thing, in this Rumble.
No, I think he's, isn't he in? I guess he is. He's not on any other show, on any other match in the card. No, I actually found a new wrestler I hate more than Yoshihashi, believe it or not.
This Tetsuya Naito's hair count.
No, we'll get to Naito later on. But yeah.
Who is the most hated wrestler in Dark Park for 2014?
The NWA Junior. No.
I started watching Noah on YouTube and stuff, and I was like, watching random Noah matches, and I was like, who's this fucking Quiet Storm guy? This guy.
Oh, he's terrible. No, he is awful. Yeah. No.
And his gimmick is terrible. Like, I will, you know, Chris, we'll talk about him like another show, but he's my new favorite wrestler to hate in Japan. I think Manabu Nakanishi serves a role. You don't have to watch him.
Yeah. He's like a media guy. He's on TV a lot. If you want to watch something that's not wrestling on New Japan World, check out Nakanishi Land. Or Nakanishi Land or Nakanishi World? What is it?
I think it's Land. I think it's Lang.
Yeah, I think Nakanishi Land. There's a few episodes on YouTube. He's entertaining.
John, how can you not get into a guy who's like a kind of a Japanese pseudo Hacksaw Jim Duggan? Come on, with that sense.
Oh, that's it. Yeah.
It's you know what? The problem is I haven't been to Nakanishi Land. Maybe that's what I need to watch. I've been influenced too much by just the man attempting pescados at the age of 47 after spinal cord problems. So
you watch him like go to like Japanese restaurants with other New Japan wrestlers. You might have a change of heart there, John.
By the way, let's throw out this extra added category. You know, best, I guess, outside wrestling performance by a New Japan talent has to go to the greatest recommendation WH Park has maybe ever given us. And that was Minoru Suzuki for 30 minutes opening up trading cards, which I believe was the wrestling YouTube video of the year. The man with, I think, more charisma than maybe anyone on this roster. And that's saying quite a lot. I love this video so much. And when I showed it to Wei, the man couldn't stop watching this. He watched the whole half hour thing in one sitting. It was just fantastic.
Well, the thing I think about that is like he's probably being completely honest in his assessment.
That's the fun part, is that you know that this is not some character he's playing. It's like probably all based on actual feelings he has towards these guys, positive and negative.
I think that's another thing that New Japan do so much better with their talent than WWE do. It's like, but like, you've got all that content that you have to make for WWE networks. Like, fuck it. You can have people open shit, and that's a half hour show. And New Japan realize that, and WWE don't, you know. It's strange, you know.
So we move on to the actual main card of Wrestle Kingdom, and we start off with the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Titles with Red Dragon defending their titles against the Young Bucks, the Time Splitters, and Forever Hooligans. Let's start with you, Chris. How much time do you think this is going to get, and do you believe that this card is going to fit into the four-hour window, i.e. will Dan Lavransky be getting the short end of the stick here? Are there concerns? Because I look at this, 10 matches in 4 hours, and it seems very daunting to fit all that in.
Yeah, I think last year they went over 4 hours.
I think last year was closer to five.
It was, yeah. It was crazy last year.
And I think we'll know right away. If these guys get like 18 minutes in the opener, I'm going to be very concerned if I'm watching this.
Well, yeah, I don't think Alex Shelley and Kushida are getting a DeLorean this year. I think it's more just like book it to the ring, just go. I mean, it's, yeah, it's, but apart from anything else, like the entrances will take forever. Just if you just walk out, that takes a long, long time to get out there. So, you know, less than 10, I would say, probably. You know, just get your quick spot first, get the crowd warmed up, and that's it. Which is a shame, but
WH, what have you thought of this pairing of these four? Where are your expectations for this?
I don't know. If they get more than 10 minutes, I think it could be a nice opener, get the crowd pumped up for the rest of the show. But I think if they get less than 15, it's kind of a waste of all these guys. They're so talented. And I think once again, it'll just be like another example of like how they really, you know, neglect the junior division. You have so much talent in that division, like in the tags, but if you split any of these teams up, like have them do singles too, like you have a lot of potential there for really making the junior division in New Japan like a lot better than it actually is. We'll see. I agree with Chris. I don't think no one's getting any kind of elaborate entrance for this. They're just going to probably rush him out, run to the ring, hurry up, you know, and then get like 8 minutes and then, you know, pin me, pay me, and then like crowd get into it. And then that's, you know, but that's the neglect that division has, unfortunately.
Yeah, we'll see. 8 minutes for these eight. Like, I can't even fathom that. But you know what? If you are working towards this 4 hour window, and I know there has been some concern of trying to get all this in there. I mean, you can't be giving these guys, you know, the 20 minutes that they probably need. And there's a lot of matches on this card that you could probably say the same that need 15 to 20. One that probably doesn't is, the 6-man tag. We have Bad Luck Fale, Jeff Jarrett, and Yujiro taking on Satoshi Kojima, Hiroyoshi Tenzan, and, maybe the sleeper performer of 2014, Tomoaki Honma, who I think is going to be the most... I'm looking forward to just Kojima and Honma spots in this particular six-man tag. Is this just a layup win for the Bullet Club, WH?
I think, you know, considering how the rest of the card's probably going to go, they'll probably get the win. I see probably Jarrett pinning Honma, which is a crying shame. That's probably what's going to happen politically. That has to happen. But I think what happens in the rest of the card with the Bullet Club, you know, so they have to get some kind of a win here.
I think we kind of dodged a bullet, so to speak, with this one, because like the original plan presumably was Jarrett and Yoshitatsu.
Yes.
Which would have been another long one to try and squeeze in there. So, a quick six-man is probably better for all concerns. You, like, yeah, have Homma do the Kokeshi to pop the crowd, and then Jarrett wallops him with a guitar, and that's it.
Now, you two both having attended Tokyo Domes many a time, you know, in a smaller building, it certainly lends itself to that crowd coming through the screen much more than a dome show. Do you see that being any kind of an issue where, you know, a Honma match, I mean, typically you put him in Osaka, for instance. I mean, this crowd is lit up. The dome, it becomes very different, especially when we've seen junior heavyweights in the past, or just that sound translating to the viewer at home. Do you think that will be a hiccup?
Yeah, it might be. You've got to sort of think about the fact that the dome as well, it's going to be nowhere near full. This isn't like they will claim a sellout, but it's going to be because it's configured for 40,000, even though it seats closer to 100,000. So, I mean, a lot of that sound does just kind of go. From a live perspective, it's kind of interesting because I think everybody gets in pockets. You have like, you hear one group all the way over there chanting one thing and one group all the way over here chanting another thing. And like, they kind of get into arguments and that's kind of, it's cool from a live perspective as well, but it's not, yeah, you don't get as much of the unison thing going, with the Japanese crowd for it to really sort of come across. So yeah, that might be a concern.
I think, like, Tenkoji and Honma will get a nice pop from the crowd, but no one cares about anyone in the Bullet Club in this match. Like, Yujiro's sure. Completely dead. Jeff Jarrett, no one gives a shit. Bad Luck Fale is kind of cooled right down. So I think hopefully this goes only, like, 6 minutes, and they get it out of the way and just everyone leaves, and that'll make the crowd happy. They'll pop for the finish because they'll be like, oh, let's get to the good stuff.
Yeah, this, you know, give them their elbow, give them the headbutt from Honma, you know, a few key spots, and then boom, let's wrap this one up because this one does not need to be eating away at the clock. Toru Yano with GHC Heavyweight Champion Namichimaru Fuji, Mikey Nichols, and Shane Hayes taking on Davey Boy Smith Jr., Lance Archer, Shelton Benjamin, and Takeshi Iizuka. And this certainly signals much more of a working relationship for 2015 between New Japan and Pro Wrestling Noah. And WH, what did you think of the mystery partner reveal and what this could lead to in 2015 between the two promotions?
Well, I think the big thing to remember is that, like, you know, in the recent Global League, like, Kojima, I think he did really well in that. He's got an upcoming match with Marufuji, I think, January 10th. Maybe. So there, I think that the purpose is to get like people interested in checking out that Noah show, and like probably Kojima's going to come in and like go face to face with Marufuji. As far as the reveal, I don't know. It was like kind of out of left field for me. I thought it would have been better to get like, you have like Davey Boy Smith Jr., Lance Archer, Shelton Benjamin. I think I said this to Chris. It's like, okay, so you get like, I don't know, somehow get Tyson Kidd, Jimmy Rave, and Charlie Haas to be Yano's partners or something like that. That wasn't going to happen, obviously, but that would have been better. But I'm not excited about this match at all, to be quite honest with you.
I think the reveals, it's hard to do. It's always hard to do those like last shows, those last Korakuen shows, because most of your foreign talent's not going to be there because it's right before Christmas. So they did what they could with what they had. I'm happy for TMDK because it's going to be the, you know, the first sort of Tokyo Dome show. So that's cool for them. And they've been sort of working hard and living here for the last little while. So that's cool. I always kind of think it kind of, whenever they do cross promotion stuff with Noah, it makes Noah look really bad. So when you have Marufuji, who's the GAC heavyweight champion, be stuck in an eight man with like Toriano, a goof. Yeah. I mean, like it kind of makes you look a little bit crappy. You know, and it's like when Nagata had like the GAC belt for like a good while last year, like New Japan, like the programming didn't really care about that. So it's like, oh, he's got this belt, you know? So, you know, hopefully that will change. And hopefully, although like a lot of Noah people are freelance, it might open the door to Daisuke Sekimoto coming in, and that would be amazing.
Are either of you surprised at Yuji Nagata's spot on this card, just a throwaway guy in the Rumble? I mean, I know he didn't have a ton going on angle-wise the last couple of months, but I am somewhat surprised that he's just thrown into that Rumble without any rhyme or reason. He's just a guy on this card.
I
think it's like an embarrassment of riches how much talent they have. Like, of his generation, Nagata's the one guy who can still go. Maybe Kojima's up there as well, but Tenzan, Nakanishi are can't go anymore. Yeah. But Nagata, I think, has a lot of steam in him. I think you could push him correctly. You could get, like, a good title run out of him again and just have him put over, like, someone, get someone ready to be that next level star using him. But I'm not surprised. There's so much talent in this company. I'd be surprised if he was higher on the card on this show, you know?
Yeah. I mean, he was, I remember last year, what did he do last year? He was kind of nowhere.
It was him and Sakuraba in that.
There you go. Yeah. There you are. Yeah.
Hollis and Daniel Gracie on the dome.
He was really vocal about being low down on the card last year in interviews and whatnot. So yeah, I mean, I'm sure he's a guy that wants one last big run, but I mean, he's a guy they could, you know, as WH said, I mean, they could give it to him at any time. And like at any point, he could walk out after the main event and go nose to nose with whoever the champion is and people would buy into it. So you know, he's kind of Teflon in that sense.
We now move into some of the key matches on the show, kicking off with Kazushi Sakuraba and Minoru Suzuki UWF rules match, meaning this can only end in a knockout or a submission. And I guess this can go one of two ways, and you can pretty much look at, last year's tag match. I think this is going to turn out pretty well, to be honest. I had such low expectations 2 years ago for Sakuraba and Nakamura, and that just blew me out of the water. Chris, what do you think of this pairing and really playing off the history more than anything?
They've had a really good few exchanges. And, like, I think that this could actually be a good, entertaining, short, emphasis short, late match.
Yes.
I think what you could do, I'm not saying it would be any good, but, like, this could be how you make up a bunch of time. If you are running long in the first part, just have Suzuki pop in, you know, with a, you know, or KOM in the first minute, or have Sakuraba grab a Kimura and it's done. Like, I mean, that could be one route if you're running long earlier on in the show.
I have this feeling that this crowd is going to become somewhat subdued, and by the time these two are in the ring, nose to nose, I think this crowd is just going to be electric for this. I think that they've built it up well, and it's just the background story. It's just it's such an easy story to tell, and I'm curious to see how that story comes across on during this match. But WH, your thoughts?
I think it's gonna be a hell of a match. Quite honestly, like the build up, like you said, has been amazing, and their exchanges just been electric. I think this should be a match that's gonna like start the revitalization of Minoru Suzuki. Like, I don't see Sakuraba winning this. I don't think he's continuing after this show. I hope he doesn't, because I don't really see him contributing. I think he takes up space on the card. I think it's a waste of money to use him the way they do. And Suzuki has a lot of steam left in him. as evidenced by his performances. Like, you know, like he's made the most out of what he's been given. But I think 2015 should be a year where he just kind of gets put prominently, like, in the title picture, whether it be the IC title or the heavyweight title. I think this match can start that, and that's what I hope happens. If Sakuraba wins, like, I'll be like slapping my head and thinking, what the fuck is wrong with Jado and Ghetto there?
As long as it doesn't go 8.5 minutes with geese and end in a disqualification like Sakuraba's match last year, this is going to overachieve from last year.
I think they're going to beat the shit out of each other in this match, actually.
That's my impression in this one. I think it's going to be, when you look back to that, that knee to the head of Sakuraba in 2013, just a moment in time that it stores up a portion of my brain at the expense of Sakuraba's.
Yeah, yeah. But did you know, maybe you have more of an insight on this, John, than I do, but like I heard a rumor that at one point Wanderlei Silva was going to be involved in this and it was going to be a tag.
I don't know if it got to the point where they actually talked to him. However, Wanderlei Silva is going over there for the Inoki New Year's Eve show. So it's not out of the question that they could try to have Wanderlei at ringside or do something. If you were going to use this guy, and it's kind of murky water of how the legalities of that would work, because the guy is still technically under contract to the UFC. However, they gave Josh Barnett the go-ahead to work the Inoki show on New Year's Eve. I don't think it's out of the question that Silva could be somehow involved in this match, or at least shown at ringside for this match, given the history, and especially with Sakuraba at the Tokyo Dome.
Yeah. There you go.
Man, we could get Wanderlei Sakuraba again in 2015.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe that'll be our Wrestle Kingdom 10 show.
I still think they should have just done vignettes with him, like, hunting anybody called Gracie and just looking through the telephone book. King on a plane, going to Brazil. Like, that would have been amazing.
I would love it. He shows up at Wanderlei's gym with a urine cup, and Wanderlei's there and runs.
Yeah.
Could do many angles with them. All right, as we get into the top end of the card, we'll take a short break right now. Earlier this week, I chatted with Scott Damore, who is one of the producers with Global Force Wrestling, chatting about the card, and then we will return as Chris WH and I break down the rest of Wrestle Kingdom 9 coming up this weekend. All right, welcome back, everybody, to Live Audio Wrestling. Our preview of Wrestle Kingdom 9 continues, and joining us right now, a man that is very much involved with this entire show, is Scott Damore, who joins us right now from beautiful Windsor, Ontario. Scott, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, John. How are you?
Doing very well. Looking forward to this card coming up this weekend, Wrestle Kingdom 9. For those out there, this is going to be the first time that Wrestle Kingdom has been this easily accessible. It'll be airing live on pay-per-view late Saturday night, early Sunday morning at 2 a.m. Eastern Time, and then replaying at 7 p.m. on Sunday night. It's also available on the Flips app. And I guess just rewinding a couple of months, Scott, the last time we had you on, you were doing the seminar with Jeff Jarrett. But since that time, you've now become very much an instrumental part with Global Force Wrestling. So just talk to us a little bit about this relationship. Obviously, you go back a long time with Jeff, but working together specifically with Global Force Wrestling and putting this show together for the North American audience.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, you kind of rolled through it as, you know, I guess you teed it up perfectly. Me and Jeff have a long history. We've worked together. We've worked well together. You know, I think there's a mutual respect there. When we last chatted, we were doing that talent search in Windsor here, which we found some great talent that I think in 2015. You'll see some of those people that were in that talent search. You'll see them pop up on Global Force Wrestling programming. And, you know, we did that, and while everything's being structured and organized, I mean, you know, kind of talked to Jeff about this Japan thing, because obviously, you know, Jeff's been going out, he's been partnering out with you know, promotions around the world, and if you're going to pick international promotional partners, then I don't know if you can, if there's one that's better than New Japan Pro Wrestling to sign up a partnership with. Their business is on fire, their roster is amazingly talented, and their shows are consistently off the hook. So chatting with Jeff about that, and, you know, had broached the subject of the idea of bringing the New Japan product, and specifically Wrestle Kingdom, to North America. You know, last January, I was in Japan. I was in Tokyo for Wrestle Kingdom. I just went over on, you know, basically pretty much some R&R, visiting some friends. You know, Tyson Dukes and John Bolin were wrestling in All Japan at the time. And, you know, I've got Kushida and Alex Shelley, who are former students of mine in New Japan. And I wanted to go over. I always wanted to experience a Tokyo Dome show. So went over there, relaxed, visited friends, you know, watched some wrestling. And, I mean, while sitting in the crowd at the Tokyo Dome and watching Wrestle Kingdom, you know, 8 live in the building, I looked around and I was like, this has to get out to a broader audience. This has to not be Japan's, you know, little secret. This needs to get to a North American audience. And it was a matter of how. And honestly, you know, I've had many conversations with New Japan over many months on how to go about it. And quite honestly, you know, involving, you know, Jeff and Global Force Wrestling really gave us the power that was needed, you know, as far as Jeff started a company from scratch. He has relationships with all the pay-per-view providers and everything else. So he was able to do the things that I never would have been able to do on my own. So we put together this deal. Global Force Wrestling gets the opportunity to promote and distribute Wrestle Kingdom 9, which I think is, you know, going to be, if not the event of 2015, I sure as hell would like to know what will end up being it, because it's amazing. I mean, you know, the New Japan product, John, and it just hits on all cylinders. It's realistic, it's hard-hitting, it's dramatic, it's entertaining, it's athletic, it has the pageantry, it has the athletic spirit, you know. So bringing that here, it's basically really been a year's work trying to get this going, and this is it's huge that Global Force Wrestling's first ever event that it's involved in promoting is I think going to be one of the biggest and best shows in wrestling history, and what better way is there to kick it off?
Yeah, and you look at putting this together, and to me, it's the clearances that this show has received. It's that kind of muscle that this show really needed in terms of reaching as many people as possible. And I think this is a great idea for Global Force Wrestling, and, you know, people speculating what is it going to grow to become as strictly a distributor. It seems like this could be really something that you latch on to, because I believe that there's a huge amount of fans out there who, it's still the traditional pay-per-view method is the way they enjoy watching wrestling. I think that there is still a hang-up for some to watch it online or watch it, you know, hooking up your computer to a TV. I think that traditional pay-per-view, it's still the most reliable method for a lot of people, and that this is kind of that gateway for them that want to sample New Japan for the first time.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. We're not quite there as far as for, you know, adapting the technology to where most people, the average person, is comfortable doing something online. I mean, you take a look at, you know, and let's use Ring of Honor as an example. They put out some tremendous, tremendous pay-per-views, you know, just off the hook quality matches and talent. But then when they went and did their first conventional pay-per-view there, the first live conventional pay-per-view, they did numbers that were just, I mean, they blew anything they had ever dreamed of doing on iPay-per-view out of the water. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely still a market for traditional pay-per-view, and the great thing is there's a need in the marketplace. You know, the pay-per-view providers, they need content, because they're not getting that content from WWE anymore. They're not getting that content from TNA on a regular basis anymore, like they were at one point when it used to be every month there was two live pay-per-views. You know, and that's, you know, with WWE shifting all gears towards the WWE network, and with TNA seem, you know, producing considerably less content in general, but specifically pay-per-view content, it's a huge gap that's opened up. So to be able to take this world-class product with unbelievable talent, and, you know, to me, I mean, what just blows it out of the water is getting, you know, Jim Ross, to come back to wrestling, to sit there ringside and call wrestling for the first time since his tenure with WWE ended. I mean, to me, that's huge. I mean, you've seen him do MMA. You've seen him do boxing. But, I mean, and as great as it was, and I'm sure they're great experiences for him, and, I mean, I know myself and other people enjoy watching it, what we really want is we want Jim Ross calling wrestling. We don't want him calling cartoon sports entertainment. We want him calling wrestling. And getting Jim Ross to be involved in this event, to me, just, I mean, takes it to a whole new level. Because when you think of all those historic moments, you think, when you think of the you know, you roll through your head and you think about all the things and the boyhood dream has, you know, become a reality. And I mean, all those moments in wrestling over decades now, the voice track to that has been Jim Ross. Like, he's been the one constant almost. He's been there for just whatever major moment in the last 30 years. And to have him come back and call this event, to me, just makes it a can't-miss opportunity for wrestling fans.
Do you think, Scott, that we got to a point, specifically in professional wrestling, and this does, I think, somewhat bleed over to mixed martial arts as well, where pay-per-views just became almost like a monthly requirement, and you would have your big shows that would be special, but there was a time period 20 years ago where just being on pay-per-view, that in and of itself was special, and then it just became something that you would get so many pay-per-views a year, and that's kind of been the push with Wrestle Kingdom. Like, this is a big show, it's the biggest show of the year for New Japan, and that pay-per-view, maybe it's not as much this dying industry some believe, but it's tailor-made for big special events, and an audience will come when they feel it's special.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, it's for so many years the wrestling model was your television show worked as your infomercial that basically sold your pay-per-view events. You know, originally it was your television show basically, you know, was to hook people in to go to your live events when they came to town that week in your town. And then it became the model kind of shifted. And it became, you know, you produce your TV show and you gear everything towards getting people to purchase that pay-per-view. Well, then, you know, the Monday Night Wars happened and it started being about now. And you're putting so much content out there over the years on Monday nights and Thursday nights and, you know, the whole thing. And so much, you know, like main event content and star versus star. Well, I think the pay-per-view started losing a little bit of that appeal. So when you can watch a 3-hour Raw with all the major stars, you know, matched up against each other on Monday, and when you can watch Impact on Wednesday and see all the major stars and world title matches and everything else, on Impact, then, I mean, there has to be a lessening of the importance of the pay-per-view. And that's kind of how the wrestling business has gone, you know, domestically. It's gone to being a TV-driven product. It used to be live events-driven. You know, then it became pay-per-view driven. Now it's became television driven, and that's what really sets New Japan Pro Wrestling apart. Is they are still a wrestling company. They have multiple revenue streams, but their biggest thing is still live events. You know, and they're gonna do a seven figure gate there at the Tokyo Dome, and that's gonna be huge for them and everybody involved in their company. And that's what makes it a big deal. And, you know, now we're getting to add another auxiliary revenue stream, that with North American pay-per-view. And for the North American audience that has been, you know, struggling to try to keep up on New Japan, or watching it on a bad feed, or while they enjoyed the Japanese announcers, you know, always, you know, kind of going, you know, it'd be nice if it was in English. So here, not only do we got English announcers, but we get the very best English announcer in history. And he's calling a product that's white hot. I mean, New Japan is so amazing. Night after night, they're going out there and laying it on the line. And everything on the Japanese wrestling calendar points to January 4th. It's the biggest day of the year in wrestling. It's where legends are made. It's where grudges get settled. And it's that day, right? Everything leads up to it. And then everything after it is the fallout from it, and then the rebuild to next January 4th. So this is that culmination. This is that WrestleMania. This is that Super Bowl. This is that, you know, that can't miss event that, you know, if you enjoy their product, and I think if wrestling fans sample it, I think they'll love the product. And now having an ability to have Jim Ross tell the stories and give the background and add that to it. Man, honestly, I think if somebody, you know, plucks down money and purchases this pay-per-view, and at the end of the four hours of wrestling action, doesn't go, wow, I mean, that was some kick-ass, amazing, performances, and that was an amazing show, then honestly, maybe I think there's a good chance maybe you've just, you know, you're not a wrestling fan anymore.
Is there anyone, Scott, you know, being over there now a number of times over the past year, watching a lot of shows closer, any performers for you that maybe you've gotten to watch a lot closer that, you know, just as a fan you're looking forward to on this show that you've had the opportunity to watch closer this year than others?
Well, I guess, and I mean, I've worked a ton with them in the past, you know, but like AJ Styles, I think AJ Styles has always been a tremendous talent. I think he's always been a phenomenal, pun intended, you know, performer. But, you know, there's a time, like watching AJ Styles and Tina, there's a lot of time where, you know, he was amazing and he's athletic. And I mean, he's got a good build and, you know, he's got a great look, you know. But I don't know how to say it other than, I mean, the AJ Styles of 2014 became a man. And I don't mean that as an insult to anything he's done before. But any point up in time until this past year or so, if I didn't know him and I was in a bar and AJ Styles was walking towards me, I don't think I'd have got out of his way. But if you watch the way he's carried himself and what he's done in the past year or so, AJ Styles comes walking towards me in a bar, I'm probably, you know, looking to slink away somewhere because he's still doing all the amazing stuff he's always done, but there's just a toughness and a hardness to him that I think has really elevated his game to another level. And being able to see that out of him, having, you know, known him and worked him for so many years, it's like I never sat there and thought, wow, you know, how could AJ Styles get better? What could we do to make AJ Styles better? Because he's already, you know, like awesome. But he's added that edge now. And I think that's been, that's been a huge factor, in his growth and for New Japan. And I think the Bullet Club is as a group, is a tremendous faction, and I think it's one of those things now. You're seeing Bullet Club t-shirts, you know, not just, I mean, it's cool that they're popping up at Ring of Honor shows and TNA shows and WWE shows and indie shows, but they're starting to pop up at rock concerts and malls and, walking down the sidewalk in the park. You're starting to see Bullet Club stuff here in North America all over the place. Man, it hasn't even been exposed over here. So it's kind of like that kind of cool thing that is starting to just, you know, get its roots here. And I think it's got it's blown up in Japan. And I think it's got the ability to do that in North America as well.
One team that, I mean, for years they have had quite a following, but 2014 was really a breakout year, I think, for them, and that was the Young Bucks, who will be involved in the four-way junior heavyweight tag title match. And, you know, I talked to them recently about the fact that when they came to New Japan, they were just told to go out there and have the best match they possibly can, and they had been used to many times in other promotions just kind of being restricted in terms of, you know, you build up a show, you don't try and steal it earlier in the night. What was your philosophy, Scott, when you were putting together shows when it came to how you motivate talent? And because we've seen a lot of people, they've gone to New Japan, and it's been a breath of fresh air for them, whether it's Davey Boy Smith Jr., Alex Shelley, the Young Bucks, as I mentioned. It just seems New Japan, they have a much more open philosophy to going out there, and it's resulted in talent that is excited to go there, that are motivated, and that's a huge part in morale being so high, I think, right now.
Yeah, I mean, when you walk into a New Japan locker room, there's definitely an unbelievable attitude. Like you use the word morale. The morale is, I mean, sky high. Because, I mean, hey, business is sky high. Houses are full night after night. The shows are off the hook. And, I mean, honestly, I mean, everybody in the company is part of the team. I mean, like from Tanahashi to Nakamura to Okada, you know, the biggest stars in the company, you don't have that. You don't have that divide like here in American wrestling. So often we have that divide where certain wrestlers show up late, go right to the private locker room, don't interact with everybody else, just do their own thing. There isn't that team atmosphere. There really is over there. Like I said, whether it's the top stars or whether it's guys like Suzuki or Kojima who've been top stars and now in the I don't want to say the latter part of their career, but I mean, they're in their 40s. I mean,
yeah,
you know, they're advanced in their career. They're still and they're there and there's a structure, but they're passing on knowledge to others, and there doesn't seem to be that hand. I need to not help you so that I can be as good as I can be, and I can make sure that I try to stay above you as long as I can. It's really about the collective. And I mean, it's awesome. It's a refreshing locker room to be in. It's so damn talented. Like, I mean, you asked me about who's impressed me. I mean, it's kind of like who hasn't impressed me, right? Like from Ishii, who just goes up there and, I mean, just has these phenomenally, you know, just brutal, violent matches. And you think at some point he's just going to stop getting up, and somehow he just keeps getting up and keeps fighting. You know, obviously the big three, Tanahashi, Nakamura, Okada, but, I mean, there's so much, like Guns and Gallo. And, you know, you mentioned Davey Boy Smith Jr. And Lance Archer, those mm-hmm. both those guys have been reborn. I mean, it's great seeing the legends like Jushin Liger and I mean, like now we just added, you know, to the Bullet Club, you know, Kenny Omega, who's been tearing it up in DDT for years now. And been, you know, and I mean, you know, not knocking DDT, because I mean, I went and watched them last January, and I mean, a packed, like oversold out Corkin Hall. I mean, just tearing the roof off for 4 hours. But now he gets a bigger platform to show people what he can do. And, you know, Kenny Omega, I've said it a few times before, I'll keep saying it, I watch him, and he does things that I just don't think a human body I never thought would be able to do some of the things that he pulls off. You know, especially because Kenny Omega is not a guy who weighs 140 pounds. I mean, he's a thick, muscled individual, and some of the things he can do are unbelievable. And, you know, he's not just a guy that's out there, you know, jumping around. I mean, he's got character and he's got charisma. And it's like, you know, like you alluded to the Young Bucks. I mean, the handcuffs are off. You know, have fun. Do what you want. Go have a match. If you have the best match on the show, good for you. Shame on everybody else. And it's just unbelievable. Like, I mean, like you think about this. Look at the four-way IWGP Junior tag match on this show. I mean, we'll take that as one example. You have the Young Bucks, who you know are going to go out there, going to be as entertaining as hell, and they're going to tear it up. You've got Red Dragon, I mean, who are very talented, very, very entertaining tag team. You know, I mean, they're one of the best tag teams in the world. And then you've got the Time Splitters. And obviously I'm biased, you know, towards Kushida and Shelley because, you know, they trained here at Can-Am. But, they're an unbelievable tag team. And then you got the change of pace with Rocky Romero and Alex Kozlov. You know, you got the Forever Hooligans there. And they're great talents, but they just bring, like, they're almost like the perfect fourth team because you have three teams that are so unbelievably, you know, fast moving and high impact and, you know, like doing the spectacular stuff. And not that Rocky and Alex don't do some of that, but they just kind of have that swagger to them, and they just have like a smugness to them. And to me, they're the perfect fourth team to be in there. They're multiple time champions. They're entertaining as all hell. They've both, you know, gotten themselves over all over the world. And there's one match on this pay per view. We're not talking about the main event. We're not talking about, you know, one of the big grudge matches at the top of the card. We're talking about a match that's, you know, it's going to have its spot on the card. It probably will be early on the card. And I'm telling you, that match alone is going to be worth buying this pay-per-view.
Now, will you be out there in the corner of Jarrett, Yujiro, and Fale for the six-man?
I think that's the plan. You know, I kind of wear two hats in this game right now. I mean, one is being the, you know, one of the event producers and producing the pay-per-view. And the other thing is you know, being at Jeff's side and going ringside. And, you know, I'm the new roadie, man. Somebody's got to carry that guitar case.
Of course.
It ain't going to carry itself out there. And, you know, I'm really honored that I've been able to do that, right, to get to be at Sumo, to Sumo Arena again, to get to go out there and be ringside in Osaka, to get to be a part of the G1 Climax Finals, you know, in August and be out there in front of, you know, another dome crowd. I mean, come on, we drew 20,000 people in a typhoon. It was raining sideways into the building, mm-hmm. you know, and there were still 20,000 people there. I mean, people shouldn't have left their front door. There were still 20,000 people there. And, you know, to be able to walk out on that stage and do that and join the Bullet Club and, you know, throw up the two suite, you know, it's really been, it's been an honor, and it's been, you know, it's kind of like, I honestly never really thought, or, you know, I never ruled it out. I think we've talked about that, but I never thought that I would be back in the wrestling game. And I certainly never thought that I would be back, you know, in anything as a performer. But getting to play that small role, you know, as, you know, Machine Gun likes to say, you know, because he jokes around because me and Devil Jeff wear suits. We're the Bullet Club office, man. You know, they're the soldiers out in the street, and we're the guys, you know, we're the guys in the suits that are taking care of things with dotting the I's and crossing the T's. But, you know, you never know. If we got to roll our sleeves up, we get our hands dirty, too, because, you know, we're the Bullet Club, and it's real.
Before we wrap up, Scott, of course, many people are always going to attach Scott D'Amore with TNA, and they had a very tumultuous 2014. And I just wanted to get some of your overall thoughts of TNA going into 2015. I think it's really unfortunate that this Spike deal has come to an end. They do have the deal with Destination America. But just some of your thoughts as kind of the outsider looking in here of their year, which was definitely a roller coaster.
Yeah, there's, you know, I mean, first and foremost, there's some fantastic, fantastic people involved in TNA.
Sure.
There's some tremendous talent that is part of the TNA roster, you know, and I'm glad that TNA has found a new home, and I'm glad that that they're going to, you know, continue in 2015, you know. I mean, so many rumors about the death of TNA, but I told somebody months ago when they were telling me TNA's dead, it's over, it's going to be done in... you know, it's going to be done in a matter of a couple months. I said, man, I remember flying home from Nashville after getting named the director of creative and basically being put in charge of the show. I flew home. This is in 2005, and I fly home, you know, May of 2005. Might have been April. And I get home. I go in my mailbox, and the first thing I pull out is a Wrestling Observer newsletter. You know, and this issue was a special issue, you know, like one of those 24-page freaking issues that takes you like all week to read. And the feature story, like 4 pages of it, was the death of TNA. And it started with something along the lines of, by the time you read this, TNA Wrestling will most likely be out of business.
And here they are.
That was in 2005. And, you know, Dave Meltzer, who's as tied into anything in this wrestling business, was writing, basically wrote an obituary for TNA in 05. And here we are 10 years later, and...
Was that right around when you came on? That would have probably been right in between the Fox Sports deal, but before the Spike deal was announced. So that was kind of the limbo period for TNA.
Yes, yeah, right? We were just finishing up our Fox Sports run, and we were looking for our new home.
Was there legitimate concern at that time? I mean, yourself in that position that we might not be around in a month.
You know what? I mean, I got to say that at the time, you know, the leadership kind of was a steadying hand, and I mean, we just put our nose down and we wrote the shows. We tried to beef up the roster and get ready. We just focused on relaunching. We weren't sure where our new home was going to be.
Right.
You know, and I can tell you when I took the job, it's the Spike wasn't even in the running for where we were going to end up. You know, there were some good options out there. Was it nerve-wracking times? Yeah, but you know, I joined TNA. You know, I wasn't a day oneer, but I joined very early. And people were telling me all the time, "Why are you going there? They're going out of business. They're going out of business. So they're going out of business from the first or second week they launched." People were saying. You know, and it's 2015 and they're still here. Do they have some issues they need to address? Probably. You know, do they need to, you know, look and revamp and figure out what they are and where they're going? Possibly. But, you know, they've got that opportunity. Destination America isn't Spike TV. It's a little smaller of a network, but it's not like it's a network that's only available in 5 million homes. It's available in, I think, around 60 million homes. It's one of the fastest-growing networks in U.S. Cable television, and it's owned by Discovery. You know, Discovery Communications is one of the biggest worldwide players. If they decide that they want TNA, Total Nonstop Action, Impact, you know, to be like a franchise player or a key program, then they can make that happen. And you know, I'm a wrestling fan. I want everybody to do well. I want WrestleMania to break all the WrestleMania records, in history in 2015. I want TNA to succeed in their new home. I want them to successfully tour. I want people to make money. I want wrestling fans to, you know, most importantly, to get a product that they enjoy and like. I want Global Force Wrestling to start up here in 2015 and build its own brand and build what it's about and does what it's looking to do, which, you know, from my understanding and my role in it is we're gonna really go out there. There's some amazing talent out in the wrestling world, all corners of it, all over the U.S., all over Europe, South Africa, Asia, the Middle East, everywhere. There's great wrestling talent. And let's start taking that talent. If stuff happens somewhere, let's get it in front of people. If there's something amazing going on, let's get it to wrestling fans. We live in a totally different age. This isn't the age where you get your one wrestling show for an hour, your 2 hours, your local wrestling show, and then, it hopefully, hooks you to go down to the arena and watch it. There's so many different products. There's so much different talent. And let's make sure that people that are out there that are really busting their butts and doing great things, let's get them in front of eyeballs so they can be recognized.
Well, looking forward to it. It's an excellent card coming up on January the 4th, headlined by Hiroshi Tanahashi and Kazuchika Okada for the IWGP heavyweight title. You've got Shinsuke Nakamura, Kota Ibushi, AJ Styles, Tetsuya Naito, just to name a few. It is coming up. You can watch it live late Saturday, early Sunday, January 4th at 2 a.m. Eastern time, and then replay Sunday night, January 4th at 7 p.m. with Jim Ross and Matt Stryker with the call. And Scott, hope you have a safe travels to the Tokyo Dome. We will be watching, and thanks a lot for stopping by. It's always great catching up with you, and we're looking forward to the show coming up on the 4th.
Hey, thanks, son. I just want to throw this out there. I mean, we're cleared on all the major pay-per-view providers, but if for some reason, if you're in an area and your local provider isn't carrying Wrestle Kingdom 9, or if you're one of those people now who doesn't have, cable or satellite television, there's a downloadable app called Flips. It's a free download, and that will allow you to purchase and watch the pay-per-view anywhere in the world.
Yes.
So, anywhere in Canada, if you're for some reason you don't have a television provider that's offering you Wrestle Kingdom, you can go online, you can download Flips, and you can still watch this pay-per-view. It's going to be great. I hope everybody likes it. I'm banking on they're going to like it. We put a lot of hard work into it. New Japan's put a lot of hard work into it, and enjoy it and keep following us at GFW Wrestling. At Scott DeMore on Twitter, and big things coming in 2015. I appreciate everything, John. It's always a pleasure talking to you.
Likewise, Scott, and have a great holiday season, and thanks a lot for giving us some time today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure, John. Anytime, and happy holidays to you.
And that was Scott DeMore, and now we get into, to me, the meat of the card. We've got Tomohiro Ishii and Togi Makabe for the NEVER Championship. The title that was, I don't know if it really resembles the vision of when this title was created, but nonetheless, we're getting Ishii and Makabe. They were part of that six-man on the last Cork and Hall show, with the finish being Makabe finishing Ishii with the King Kong knee drop. Ishii's left shoulder, still a mess from the G1, where he tore his rotator cuff, and then decided in infinite wisdom to not only keep going, but to put out Match of the Year contenders, especially with Yuji Nagata. WH, we'll start with you. Tomohiro Ishii, Togi Makabe. Where do you see this one going, and the year that these two have had?
Ishii's just been on fire. I think he's been on fire for the last 2 years. Makabe's kind of been in that, limbo. Not down on the card, but not really high on the card, but he's had nice flourishes here and there. But I don't see him getting that NEVER title. It seems to be like Ishii's belt, like the IC belt is like Nakamura's belt. I don't think it would serve Makabe, do him any favors to have that belt. Ishii needs to take time off, but he's not going to because he's like a Japanese wrestler. I think Sakuraba and Suzuki, they're going to beat the shit out of each other. This match, they're going to beat the shit out of each other. I think Ishii's going over. I think Makabe has to, I think Makabe should go in the tag division. They should just do tag stuff with him and Honma, or him and Tanahashi, quite honestly. I like that tag team a lot. I don't know. Ishii keeps the belt, beat the shit out of each other. There you go.
Chris, do you assume She retains?
Yeah, I think so. It's going to be another sort of short 6 or 7 minute one. Yeah, I think that the belt's interesting. I mean, it is just his sort of accessory. It belongs with Ishii now. And I mean, it's definitely sort of changed from, I mean, I think they screwed it up in the first place because they had that tournament in Shibuya a couple of years ago. And then they gave the winner of that tournament amongst all the sort of younger talent that was in that. Cause it was like, this is going to be our developmental thing. It's going to be like NXT. And then they gave it to Masato Tanaka, which just made no sense. So it was kind of like a little bit doomed for the outset, but I think it's kind of morphed into this, almost like, I mean, I don't want to say strong star, but it's sort of like the strong, it's like the New Japan strong belt, you know, it's like for the hard cases only kind of thing. And so it kind of makes sense. So you got like Ishii and Makabe, who are like the two biggest hard cases in the promotion, like going at one another. I think there's an appeal to that, but definitely it belongs with Ishii.
IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship, Raisuke Taguchi defending against the cleaner, Kenny Omega. And Chris, is Taguchi essentially, is his elaborate entrance going to be a silver tray that he brings this title down the ring sure. to in order to present to Kenny Omega? Is there any other finish than Omega winning the title on the Tokyo Dome show?
God, if they're sensible, yeah. I can't stand Yusuke Taguchi. He's also the one person that trips up every single English commentator name-wise in the world, because I've heard everything from Raisuke. I was watching Matt Stryker doing like breakdowns. So Matt Stryker's done decent videos for DFW's YouTube, and like he was like stoned. Ryusuke. But yeah, Yusuke, he's just...
Well, as the authority, Chris,
yeah.
What is your official ruling? And WH, feel free to rein in.
On Ryusuke. It's Ryusuke.
Ryusuke.
Ryusuke, yeah. He's like, this is... it's the same as when Street Fighter 2 was big, and then I was like, I'm going to play Ryu. And then, like, you find out years later it's pronounced Ryu. But, yeah. God, I just... But the thing is, I think Taguchi with the right opponent can be good. I don't know if you saw his match with Kushida from September.
Yeah.
It was a phenomenal match.
I haven't been as down on Taguchi. I think he tries a lot of weird stuff that just doesn't fit him. Mm. I hate the whole funky weapon deal. I don't know. It just seems he experiments with a lot of stuff that it doesn't always connect. But it's frustrating because I see something there. I just don't know what I see right now.
Right. Yeah.
That's my best description of Taguchi. But I'm assuming here Omega wins. I think any other finish would just be silly. But this is a match that I think, as much as they pushed that night after show at Korakuen, I think this match could have been better served there, where it could have been much more of a focal point than it's kind of buried here when you look at what's following this and even what's preceding it.
Yeah, I think like the night after show, they're really pushing Liger and Desperado. So like that's their sort of big junior heavyweight match, I guess. But yeah, I mean, I think like this is going to be there to sort of put Omega over as a big deal and kind of reinvent himself. And he's been lucky coming in. I mean, he's been good coming in because he's changed his look and his sort of approach and all that stuff, and that's been fantastic. But he's been lucky as well that Ibushi has moved up to heavyweight, so that there isn't like this, they aren't going to go straight to that dynamic, which they could so easily have done, which wouldn't have helped either of them. So to bring him in as a heel and having completely changed his persona has been great. So yeah, this might be a dark horse kind of a match. I'm looking forward to it hesitantly.
Be a fun match. Taguchi, he's not staying the champ. I mean, this is they signed Omega. They have planned for him, obviously. This is his like start, his ascension to like, you know, be top junior guy in the company. I think they're really high on him, obviously. Like, they give him a new gimmick. They put him in the Bullet Club. They, you know, and he's gonna get the belt at the Tokyo Dome. I think he's gonna do wonders with that belt. I'm just worried, like, you're gonna have, like, you know, Bullet Club Prince Devitt syndrome with that belt and just, like, too much interference in a lot of his matches. I hope they tone that down. But, yeah, Taguchi, I don't know what to do with that guy. Like, you know, I think he cries every night when he watches NXT and he sees, you know, Prince Devitt there doing pretty well, and he's stuck. He's not like that. He's not doing bad. He's champion, but at the same time, he's like, he doesn't know what to do with himself. I think that's the problem with him. Like, they don't know what to do with him, and he doesn't know what to do with himself, because like he wants to be Eddie Guerrero, he wants to be Kurt Angle, he doesn't know his own identity anymore without Prince Devitt. It's pretty sad.
What do you think about the junior heavyweight division for 2015, especially given the relationship with Ring of Honor, because it seems like a natural fit for that specific division with a lot of the talent at ROH right now?
I don't know. Like, I tend to think that, you know, the waters might be become kind of murky with like the continuing NWA involvement with New Japan. If they have a straight ahead relationship with Ring of Honor and just getting in talent from that company and putting a lot of them into the junior division, I think the prospects of having like a really excellent best of Super Juniors this year is really high. I know, but the problem is that they don't have enough Japanese talent to fill that division. I tend to look at companies like NOAH especially. They did an excellent job of just grabbing like a lot of these, you know, freelancers or guys who are in like indies and getting them in their junior division and then using them really effectively. It freshened up their junior division. I think that's the problem with New Japan. It's like, it's not fresh. It hasn't been fresh for a long time. But we'll see what happens. I remain optimistic though.
I have some breaking news here for folks out there in Canada. A lot of confusion has been, discussed regarding the airing of this particular pay-per-view on late Saturday night, early Sunday morning on Rogers here in Canada. It will be airing live at 2 a.m. Eastern time. However, Rogers is not carrying it on the Sunday night time slot. Instead, Sunday night, January 4th, will be a showing of Badass Babysitters followed by Big Titty MILFs 22 and I swear to God, guys, on the Saturday night going head-to-head with UFC 182, a woman who has competed at the Tokyo Dome, Joni Lauer.
Oh, no way.
The best of her adult performances will be airing on pay-per-view in Canada head-to-head with UFC 182. So if you are new to New Japan and you want to see one of Masahiro Chono's most legendary opponents, you can order that pay-per-view right before Wrestle Kingdom 9.
Wait, does JR do commentary on that as well?
Probably not. But probably a few slobber knockers in both events you can order for those with Rogers in Canada. Well, that brings us up to the tag title match. We have Katsuyori Shibata and Haruki Goto, who won the tag league tournament, defeating champions Carl Anderson and Doc Gallows in the finals. Titles on the line here. It has been a year since Anderson and Gallows won said titles at last year's Tokyo Dome show. I thought the finals were a pretty strong match. I don't know if they're going to have the ability to have that kind of a match in this setting, especially when you look at the three matches that follow it that I think are the highest priorities on this show. And this tag title match, to me, it isn't a priority on this show, and I could see these being four guys of the many on this show that might be affected by time. Your thoughts, Chris?
Yeah, you're probably right, which is a shame. But I think Shibata and Goto are working really well together. And if I were them, I'd put the belts on them. So it's something for them to do for a little while until the summer, and then they can break off after the G1, and you know, you could maybe get Shibata back up to that sort of upper echelon, so to speak. I'd like to see, I don't know, it's like you don't have enough tag teams in the heavyweight scene, so it's like I don't want like people to break off and do their own single stuff, but it's like I much prefer Carl Anderson in a single setting than in a tag setting. I think he's kind of undervalued by keeping him in tag matches. But still, yeah, I mean, I'd pick Shibata and Goto for this one.
I'm going to go with Chris. Like, there's no point in keeping it on the Bullet Club. I think they've done everything they can with those belts. I think it's a great way to kind of jumpstart Shibata and Goto having a strong tag team. And I do think, like, they should be a tag team. They shouldn't be doing single stuff. They should be focusing on that, on the defending the tag titles and just having great matches with like, and just getting New Japan should just start establishing other people into solid regular tag teams. Like these guys who are lost in shuffle, put them in tag teams. You'll have another dimension. Like you can make those belts mean something again. And then, okay, we ran out of optimums for main events for, you know, Osaka or Yokohama or Fukuoka. Oh, these tag belts are really strong. Goto and Shibata are a hot act. Let's do something with them. I think it would solve a lot of problems if you really made the tag division, the heavyweight scene, a lot stronger than it actually is right now.
Do you think, like, sorry to digress, but do you think, like, that having the IC belt has hurt the tag division? Because like now it's like, well, we can have two, or we have to have two major singles feuds going at the same time. Whereas before you only had one. So like, it means fewer guys are freed up.
No, not really. I don't think those tag titles have been important for a long time. I think the IC title, like, didn't really devalue it. You know, I think just neglect has devalued it. You'd like, okay, we're going to put on these guys. Like, even when you had a solid tag team, like, you know, Bad Intentions or, you know, that was okay, but you never had anyone who was like a regular Japanese tag team, like hold it. Like there hasn't been a great Japanese tag team since like Kojima and Tenzan back in the late 90s. So I think it's a great way to do something with Goto. Goto's, I don't know what you're going to do with him as singles wise for the foreseeable future. Put him in a tag team, like, and get Shibata working regularly, like with him and just having these great tag matches. And then when you break him off into singles, which they should do in the future, like in the next, you know, 9 to 12 months, then he's ready. Like everyone's going to be intrigued. Oh, I want to see him have singles matches with these guys and these guys and these guys. But you can tease a lot of that with, you know, having tag matches, him and Goto having tag matches with various combinations of Makabe, Nakamura, Ishii, Tanahashi, Okada, whoever, right? I think that will create a lot of intrigue for when, you know, Shibata and even Goto, like, you know, they try to give him a singles push, both of them, you know, in the future.
All right. Now we get into the three real big focal matches of the show, starting off with Tetsuya Naito and AJ Styles. It's a rematch from this past year's G1 where Naito beat Styles. It was an excellent match. Styles, certainly one of the standout performers of this past summer's G1. Naito winning the tournament the year prior. I'm really looking forward to this. I think AJ Styles, you could make a hell of an argument for this guy being Wrestler of the Year in 2014. Just so reinvigorated coming over to New Japan, had a tremendous G1 tournament. He's been excellent in this role, and I certainly have really high expectations for this one, Chris.
Yeah, so do I. I mean, like, at last month's show, I picked Naito and Styles as my favorite match of last year. I think, yeah, as I said back then, that match did more for Tetsuya Naito in like 15 minutes than all of 2013 did for him. So yeah, I mean, here's a guy, I think Naito always, you always feel like he's got a lot, he has to have a lot to prove, and he always does, like he's always sort of under the cosh a bit and they never pull the trigger on him. So yeah, I mean, he's got to sort of maximize his minutes, so to speak. I still think probably Styles is going over on this one, because I suspect that Styles is going to be next in line for the heavyweight belt or the IC belt, like one of the two. But yeah, I think, I mean, all of these three matches are going to be fantastic. But yeah, especially, I think Naito and Styles is going to be one to watch.
Where do you view Naito in his positioning, WH? I mean, he was the project of 2013, such a huge part of last year's Dome show. And not that I'd, you know, not that he's just a throwaway. He's in a featured match on this Dome show, but do you see him kind of settling into a role similar that Goto is in, where he's always, you know, one key angle away from, you can program him into a title program if you need something, but it doesn't look like this guy is going to reach the level that they certainly had expectations of in 2013 to make him kind of the third one with Tanahashi and Okada as your top guys.
You know, like for people who might be listening to this, who aren't so familiar with New Japan, are going to try Wrestle Kingdom. Tetsuya Naito is kind of like Triple H in 2000, like before, you know, before he had those matches with Mick Foley. Like that's what he needs. He needs like that feud that's going to be his, like take him to that next level. It could be with AJ. I don't think so, because I think they look at AJ more as like more upswing and more potential to be involved in the title picture. Naito, like, I mean, I've said this countless times, Naito has to like have that feud and those series of matches that are going to put him to that next level where the fans like appreciate his work. He's a great worker, but he's not a star, you know, like in the sense of like same level as Tanahashi or Nakamura. And, you know, and coming with that, I'm going to beat a dead horse again. He needs a makeover. He needs to change his look. He looks like a jabron. Like, he looks like a jobber, for God's sakes. Like, his whole look is terrible. So he needs a feud. He needs a makeover. And, like, I think he needs to turn heel, quite honestly. I think that would do wonders for him as well.
Or what you could do is pair him with Ibushi and have those two against, like, Goto and Sakuraba, Shibata for a bit.
Could do that. I think, like, Ibushi with Ibushi or Ishii?
With Ibushi.
With Ibushi. I think they definitely have plans with Ibushi. I don't think putting him with Naito is part of those plans. I think Tetsuya Naito has to, like, go heel, join some kind of group, and, like, you know, maybe rise to be the leader of that. That will give him that excuse to have a makeover. The other thing is, like, bring out his personality more. I think he works better as a heel, to be quite honest. When he does have those kind of heel tendencies, I think it's more natural for him.
Yeah, and always teases those. I mean, he'll always bring them out now and again, never fully goes into that heel mode. But you're right, WH. I think it's something he very well could do, and that could couple in with your makeover theory if you were to go all the way with Naito in that direction.
I mean, a good example is Chono. Chono before was like a star. But when he became, like, you know, black leather Yakuza Chono, that's when he became a fucking superstar in New Japan. And, like, everyone remembers, like, you know, like, Team 2000 Chono, NWO Masahiro Chono. They don't really remember, like, you know, like, Luthez, you know, disciple Chono that much. That's the thing with Naito. He needs to, like, get that makeover. He needs to get that feud. He needs to have that angle. He needs to turn heel, and then he'll break into that upper echelon, I think. But right as he is right now, no. And I think AJ is gonna have an amazing 2015. I have this feeling that New Japan really wants to keep him in the company. I don't think they want to, like, have him go over to do whatever, like, Jeff Jarrett's doing with GFW. I think they're going to put the belt on him. I think there's a lot of potential for him to have great matches and draw a lot of money with a bunch of different people. And, like, there's still going to be fresh matches, I think. So, I mean, you still have yet to do Nakamura and AJ. So I think there's a lot of potential in that match.
I don't think anyone had a better career move than AJ Styles, who it was definitely a reduction in his guarantee from TNA, but that's really tough to say no to guaranteed six figures to go out into the indie scene. I don't think he really grasped where New Japan was and what kind of a fit it would be. I mean, we've seen many guys go over there, and it's just not a fit. It's a square peg in a round hole. And he was just, this thing just worked out so well for him in 2014. And I think if you weren't convinced by the G1, you certainly were afterwards. I'm completely with you, WH. I think that he's one of the best pickups New Japan has made in a long, long time that you can slot into many different roles throughout next year. Then we go to the Intercontinental Championship match. Shinsuke Nakamura defending against Kota Ibushi. I think this one could steal the show. If you have watched their sequences recently at the Cork and Hall shows, I think these guys are going to have a dynamite match. I can't say enough about Nakamura, and I really think that this could be the big crowning moment for Ibushi. I could see if they want to prolong it a bit longer. I think you could definitely stretch this out of multiple singles matches, but I think Ibushi winning the title should be a really big deal and signifies his elevation out of the junior heavyweight division. And as WH said earlier, Nakamura has been entrenched with this Intercontinental Championship. Chris, do we get the title switch on January 4th?
I don't think it's the Japanese way. I think, like, you know,
make you wait.
Sure, exactly. You know, I think that's the thing. It's always, you know, a guy comes back from injury, he always loses his first match. And I think this is the first, this is obviously like Ibushi's first big match since going heavy. It would be huge, definitely, but I'm not 100% sure they'll do it. But yeah, I mean, either way, what we'll get is definitely the best match on this card. I'm with you. Those sequences, like, especially in the six man, were amazing. The Bomae that he leapt over and just jumped on Nakamura's face. That was
incredible.
Unbelievable. It's, yeah.
Even watching it in the replay, how they timed that spot. I almost wish they saved it for this match, that spot. Sure. I thought it was just excellent.
Yeah, yeah. And his guy, you know, I think, like, the match they had at the G1 in 2013, that was my match of the year that year. It's just, yeah, I mean, his Ibushi's gotten really good at kind of just being, I think over his last year at DDT, he'd gotten a little bit smarter and he's slowed down a little bit more. He's gotten a little bit more sensible with his stuff. He hasn't done as many, you know, stupid balcony dives, last year, although he's done a few. I think in a way he's had to work these two schedules, which is absolutely exhausting, but I think it's probably taught him a few lessons about working a little bit smarter instead of working harder. So I think we'll see that, and we'll see a little bit more of the sort of the angry, strong style Kota Ibushi. I like that. There's this thing he doesn't have that much charisma when he talks. He's not a great talker, but it comes through in the ring, especially when he always, like, you know, they always say, the announcers say, that the switch is flipped when he does that sort of charge up lariat. I think this, I mean, it just blows everything else away on the card for sure for me. This is, like, definitely the match I'm most invested in.
How about you, WH?
Oh, this is, like, same with Chris. I'm totally looking forward to this match. This would be the match, like, I'm going to miss not seeing live the most and being there. I think it's going to be an electric match. We're talking about fitting everything into that four-hour window. Like, they're not going to shortchange the, you know, Naito and AJ. They're not going to shortchange the main event. They're certainly not going to shortchange this match. This match is going to go about 20 minutes, I think. I think Ibushi's going to win the belt because I think he's going to be, like, 2013, that was, Naito was a project. 2015, Ibushi's going to be the project. And I think he's going to do wonders with the IC belt, like, once he gets it. I think it's time for Nakamura to move on. I think it's time to freshen up the heavyweight division. You can't have Tanahashi in there so much in 2015. Nakamura has to get that heavyweight belt. He's ready for it. He's been ready for it for a long time. And then you have to do Okada Nakamura, because Tanahashi Okada has been played out. I'm sorry. It's a great match, but you need to put it to rest for at least a year, in my opinion.
Do you think, WH, that this plan, at least they had the Tokyo Dome somewhat penciled in around G1 time? Do you think that, you know, what would have Ibushi's role been had he not gotten hurt before the G1? Do you think he would have been kind of a Final Four player in that tournament, knowing where they were eventually going, that this could have been, this show was kind of his big crowning moment, so to speak, as one of those projects, had he had a really solid G1. Where do you think things would have gone had he not been hurt?
I don't think he would have won the G1. I don't even think he would have been in the finals. I think he would have been, like, in the Final Four for sure. I think, like, if you look, like, in Japan, they don't really sign people from other companies. But not only did they sign him from DDT, not only did they allow him to, like, continue to work for DDT, but now they could have just slotted him as that junior heavyweight ace and try to build a division around him. But they didn't do that. They said, okay, you know what? You can be a heavyweight. We see something in you that we think you're going to be a heavyweight. We see something in you where you're going to fight Nakamura, like, the second biggest star. Like, Tanahashi is the biggest star. Okada's the third biggest star. Nakamura is the second biggest star in that company. There's no argument, like, from anyone. Like, there might be arguments, but you're all wrong. But Ibushi is going to beat Nakamura because he's the project for 2015. He's the guy that they're going to say, okay, Okada, Ibushi, AJ, and possibly Shibata are going to be the four guys we're going to build the future, the next 5 to 10 years of this company around, because they're all kind of fresh. Like, even AJ, he's still fresh in Japan, but, like, you – that's where you get, because Tanahashi has to start, like, you know, still be in the mix, but he can't be that top guy anymore. It's played out, like, for him. I'm a big fan of his, but, like, I don't want to see him win that belt again this year. Like, I really don't. I think it would be a detriment to both him and New Japan. So, yeah, you got to move Nakamura up there. So Ibushi gets the IC belt, Nakamura moves into the heavyweight division.
And that will take us to the main event. Hiroshi Tanahashi defending the IWGP title against Kazuchika Okada. They have not had a match since October of 2013. That was the King of Pro Wrestling show. You look at their body of work, a tremendous amount of matches that these two have had throughout 2012, 2013. Chris, what were your thoughts when they announced this would be headlining the Tokyo Dome? Did you feel it had been long enough since the last one? What were your initial reactions?
I think, like, I initially groaned at it, and then I, you know, had to rethink it and go, actually, no. It's like the first time you hear that, it's like, we've seen it so much, but then you stop and you think about it and you go, well, we've seen it so much and it's always been good. And it's always been different as well. I mean, I'm sure, like, both those guys kind of know that without a doubt. And you've got like lots of things and lots of little elements that you play off there in terms of both of their characters. Okada having been in that position of being the guy last year, but he was bumped to the semi-main event in the fan vote. There's that kind of thing. There's always kind of an interesting dynamic, especially when you have a Tokyo Dome kind of crowd, when you have something like Wrestle Kingdom, because you get that sort of, you almost have, it's a different thing to a John Cena, but you have that pocket of Tanahashi, you know, people that like to boo Tanahashi, and Tanahashi loves to play up to that. So you might get a little bit of heel Tana. And I always think, just like we were talking about Naito earlier on, I love Tanahashi when he works heel. I think, yeah, I mean, there's all these little dynamics that will go into it that will make it a really good match. But it has to be something good, because we're all going to be really tired at this point, especially after the semi.
Yeah, you would think that these guys are going a minimum 30 minutes. And when you throw in the entrances here, if you are going to have elaborate entrances, it's probably going to be reserved for these top two matches. A quick transition of Tanahashi getting the title from Styles to Okada, or does Tanahashi retain?
I think, like, Okada's going to get the belt. I think you have to start mixing Okada more with, like, the other people on the card. Like, I think he should have matches with, you know, some point Ibushi. I think, you know, you have to move him away from Tanahashi. It's always good, but you have to move him away from him. You have to start mixing him with Nakamura, and for that I think you have to dissolve Chaos once and for all. Like, it's such a stale gimmick, it's such a stale grouping, it doesn't make any sense at all. The only guys who are, like, really united are, like, Nakamura, Ishii, and Okada in, like, six matches. Usually Yano has no part of it, really. He's, you know, no one else is, like, I think Forever Hoogans are supposed to be associated with him, but they're not
right,
really. They should just end that, and, like, you know, Chris is saying, like, Tanahashi is a heel. That would be interesting. I think Tanahashi and Naito turning heel, maybe they form a new heel group. That would be interesting. I think that would, you know, but Nakamura has to kind of break away, be his own guy, and, like, maybe hit just him and Ishii together as a tag team, and then, like, and then Nakamura just says, like, I want that fucking belt. I want the IWGP heavyweight belt. Okada's going to win it. I don't see the benefit of keeping it on Tanahashi, really. And I think it has to signal, like, this movement to, like, okay, 2015 is the year, like, it's the halfway point in this decade. Like, we have to start thinking about building our future. I think the push for Ibushi is a sign of that. I think Shibata getting slowly but surely getting more of a push is a sign of that. And, like, I don't see how you keep it fresh with Tanahashi, like, always having the belt, always going for the belt, especially always going against Okada. I will say this. I think it's going to be a hell of a match. I think this is actually the dark horse match, because I think most people are thinking that Ibushi and Nakamura is going to be just, you know, off the charts. So these guys have had multiple matches. They've always been different. So I think they're going to think, okay, everyone's going to look at that match as being fresh. It's intriguing people. We got to just blow them away with our match, even though we've done it like, you know, a million times, you know, figuratively speaking.
Yeah, I mean, and if you watched, you know, just their brief interactions on the Korakuen shows, I have no doubt this is going to be a tremendous match. Is Hiroshi Tanahashi the best wrestler in the world? Not at this point, but he is still the top drawing guy right now in New Japan, and I can see that reliance on Tanahashi still at this point, and he hasn't really proven otherwise at this point. I think it's going to be a hell of a match. I'm just hoping these last three matches are kind of New Japan understood. This is the meat of the show, these last three matches, and not really worrying about the pay-per-view window or anything like that. But that's kind of, I think everyone, at least the North American audience, that's in the back of their mind, is like having watched prior Tokyo Dome shows and looking at these top three matches of how much time each of them needs, along with entrances. It's going to eat up a huge portion of the show. But there you go. That is Wrestle Kingdom 9 coming up on late Saturday night, early Sunday morning in North America. The New Japan Rumble kicks off at 1:15 a.m. Eastern time, and then the show goes live at 2 a.m. Eastern time. WH Park will be watching. Chris Charlton will be there live. And then on Monday next week, they will be running down the show along with Dan the Mouth Lavransky, who's going to be watching the show with the English commentary with Jim Ross and Matt Stryker. And WH, what did you think of the pairing with Jim Ross and Matt Stryker? Are you going to seek out just to hear Jim Ross call a New Japan Pro Wrestling card, picking out a match or two at a later time?
I think everyone in North America should, you know, go out and try to order the show, because I think it would be really interesting to hear Jim Ross call New Japan Pro Wrestling. I think there's going to be genuine excitement in his voice that maybe he hasn't had in the last few years of his WWE run. As far as Matt Stryker, he's always proven, like, when he was commentating in WWE, that he knows what he's talking about. So, yeah, I think it's a good pairing. I think you're going to, a lot of fans are going to get a lot of information and become really well-informed while they're watching, you know, Wrestle Kingdom.
Yeah.
They're going to be like, oh, shit, what's going on with these guys? And then both Jim Ross and Matt Stryker are going to fill in the blanks for new fans and fans who might be like, oh, what's this Japanese wrestling stuff? And so, yeah, I think it's a great move. I'm looking forward to, checking some of it out eventually at some point. I'm looking forward to just, you know, using New Japan World. It's going to be actually my first time streaming a live show. So I'm excited, but I'm a little concerned about how well it's going to be when I actually watch it live.
Always that problem with live streaming. But thus far, New Japan World has really not had any hiccups along the way. And we're going to end the show off with our chat with Jim Ross. But before we do so, I want to throw out some random questions at both of you guys as we look ahead to 2015, starting with you, Chris. Who you feel is going to be the breakout star of 2015? And then WH, we'll get your answer as well.
Breakout star.
Who is it? And someone that's not like a Kota Ibushi, someone that maybe is less on people's radar today, that a year from now maybe has that year that just impresses everyone that you don't see coming.
So you who I want it to be, and we've said it enough times on the show each month, I want it to be Sekimoto. I think here's this guy that has toiled in the Indies and for Big Japan for a long, long time. And he's starting to get those breaks at Noah and things like that. If Noah and New Japan sort of have that stronger relationship, I could almost see him be that sort of surprise entrant, that last entrant into the G1, that is enough of a name to wrestling fans that when that Daisuke Sekimoto names comes up, people will go, oh, and then he will likely have amazing matches, especially, you know, the dream match that I want to see this year is Sekimoto and Ishii. Without doubt, that would just be, that wouldn't make my year if we got that pairing. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not saying it's definitely going to happen, but I hope that Sekimoto gets his dues.
WH, breakout star.
Breakout star. My hope is that the Time Splitters split up.
Oh.
And that both Kushida and Alex Shelley,
yeah,
just get fucking push, get rockets strapped to their backs in the junior division as single stars. I think if that happens, like, Kushida will do well, but I think you're going to see, like, a new Alex Shelley. I think you're going to see Alex Shelley just tear shit up. Like, if you remember his performance in the Best of the Super Juniors, what, like, 2 years ago? Was it 2 years ago, Chris?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
He was fucking awesome. Like, just, and, like, not as a heel. Like, if anyone's going to go heel among those two, I think Kushida should become a heel. I think Alex Shelley's just a natural baby face. Like, especially in Japan. Like, that's my hope of who becomes a breakout star. Who might actually become a breakout star? I think Shibata is going to have a hell of a year. Even if he's, like, predominantly in tag matches, I think they're just going to tear shit up every time they defend those titles. But my hope, Alex Shelley especially, but Kushida as well. But they got to split up the time splitters. That's done.
Yeah.
Okay, we got two more here. We'll start with WH this time around. Who wins the G1 in 2015?
Oh my God. Kota Ibushi.
Ooh.
I agree with WH. I think it's could very well be, you know, Shibata has been, you know, the guy every year it seems we're going to the G1, and it's like Shibata, this has to be the year they put it on him, but I kind of lean Ibushi as we look 9 months out. But
I think
Chris,
Ibushi defeats Okada in the finals.
See, that to me, that's a big match, and I hope that I could see that being a Tokyo Dome match at some point down the line. I really think they have huge hopes for Ibushi, and I have more confidence in Ibushi making that transition than Naito did. But getting back to the G1, Chris, who wins in August?
Tomoaki Honma. No,
does he win a match in next year's G1?
Yeah, does he win a match this year? That's the question, yeah. I like, as much as I hope that Ibushi, you know, and I, as much as I know they have big plans for him, it's the same thing everywhere. I think people, you know, they tend to look to their own. It's the same in WWE. It's the same in New Japan. So I'm going to say Nakamura.
And final one here, Chris, starting with you. Next year, when we're doing this show, what will be the main event of Wrestle Kingdom 10?
Shit, right. So if Nakamura wins the G1, then Nakamura Okada.
Okay, Nakamura Okada. WH?
Okay, so if my prediction...
You said Ibushi wins
the
G1.
Yeah, so Ibushi and Nakamura rematch, but this time for the heavyweight title. Because Nakamura will win the heavyweight title and defend it at the Tokyo Dome next year.
Wow, interesting. Well, there you go, folks. The best in the business. Chris Charlton and W.H. Park from Japanese Audio Wrestling. And once again, they'll be back on Monday, so you'll get a full breakdown of the show from three different perspectives. This is going to be like the final scene of Jackie Brown, but it's going to be Wrestle Kingdom 9. Three different points of view on Wrestle Kingdom 9. We're going to have the live experience, the New Japan World version, and the English commentary version that Dan Lavransky will be checking out. So you can catch that at liveaudiowrestling.com. WH and Chris, they do Japanese audio wrestling each and every month here on the site. You can subscribe for free on iTunes and follow them at WH Park 9. It's the number 9. And Chris is at ReasonJP. And taking us out right now is Me and Way's chat with Jim Ross, discussing how the whole New Japan deal came together with Global Force Wrestling, some of the challenges of this broadcast. Lots here with Jim Ross. He is going to be the voice of New Japan Pro Wrestling on January the 4th, which we will be watching on pay-per-view. He is Jim Ross. And Jim, a Merry Christmas to you there in Norman, Oklahoma.
Thanks, guys. Thanks. You too. Hope everybody's doing well there in your neck of the woods.
Yes, we wanted to definitely chat about the New Japan show that is coming up on January the 4th. We're just a couple days out at this point. I just wanted to go back, and when this offer first came your way, what was the deciding factor? I mean, you're certainly at a level right now. There's nothing out there you have to do. It's kind of you do pick and choose what you are going to do. Getting back into professional wrestling like this, what was the deciding factor for Jim Ross to be going to Tokyo?
That's a hard question to answer, actually. I really didn't have a lot of interest when I first heard about it, because it was to me, as a novice New Japan follower, it didn't push the right button. In other words, I was not so familiar with the product that I said, yeah, that would be great. That'd be a pretty cool deal to do. To me, in the very beginning, it was a big wrestling show a long way away that you had to negotiate your fee for, and with a guy that I hadn't talked to since 1999.
That's right.
So my manager, Barry Bloom, started talking with Jeff Jarrett, and you know, they came up with some interesting numbers and some interesting strategies on compensation and things of that nature. So it piqued my curiosity to learn more about the product, because as you said, I'm not in a position right now, luckily, that I need to go to Japan to hit the grocery store, you know, but I'm an entrepreneur. I'm an independent businessman. I like to look at different projects, look at different things. So I looked at it in that regard, John, and I started looking at New Japan matches on YouTube. And I'd never watched any iPay-per-views of theirs. So I was not the, and I'm admitting it, you know, I was not the devotee of New Japan. Not for any reason, just there was plenty of wrestling on my TV as it was,
mm-hmm.
and I kind of stayed with that path hand. But I started watching New Japan, and I said, this is some great stuff. This reminds me of old school, fundamentally sound, logical, physical wrestling. And so the more I watched, the more I became a fan of the brand. And then it made it easier to compromise on a quote-unquote deal to get me to do the show over there. So it was a major issue, because for about, 8-9 months, my wife and I planned on going to Vegas that weekend to watch USC. It was also my 63rd birthday. It's on January 3rd. So it was kind of a birthday celebration, and, you know, you never know how many birthdays you're going to have, so you take advantage of one good day at a time. And so we're going to go to Vegas, had that plan. And so I had to move a lot of things around. The birthday weekend was off the table. Not the greatest thing in the world for a married man. you're no honey, by the way. You're not going to Vegas to do any shopping or to go to a spa or whatever. But I'm going to fly to Japan, and you're staying home. So, you know, so that was how that worked. It was a little bit more. It was a unique set of circumstances. I didn't have to do the thing, but she knew that I had passion for, you know, kind of wanting to do another wrestling show. See how much fuel was left in the tank just for the hell of it. We made our deal. So I don't know. I think me looking at the product and enjoying what I saw was probably the deciding factor. It really wasn't the money. It really wasn't the deal. It was the opportunity to be the play-by-play guy at a major pay-per-view in a new environment for me, with all new talents for me, basically. So I think seeing the New Japan product really, you know, flipped the switch to say, let's get this done.
What do you foresee to be the biggest challenges in calling a brand new product in a, you know, pretty different market with a very different style from what, you know, we've heard you call for the past, for most of your career? And obviously New Japan is a very dedicated and loyal fan base. What do you think will be the biggest challenges that you feel like you have to live up to?
Oh, gosh. There are a lot of them, actually, when you stop and think about it. If you think about it from a broadcaster's perspective, you know, you think about things that are maybe off the board, but it's a 4-hour pay-per-view. Are there any bathroom breaks? You know, you got a Mother Nature's going to win on that deal. Is the TV run sheet going to be in Japanese, or can I get a copy in English? Is the producer that counts us in and out going to be counting in Japanese, or are we going to have somebody counting in English? if I need more volume in my headset and I'm sitting at ringside or sitting near ringside inside the corral there, does the floor manager speak English or does he only speak Japanese? How do I explain to him what I need technically? A lot of things like that pass through my mind. And none of them have anything to do with calling a wrestling match bell to bell. I feel very, very comfortable that I can pull that off without, you know, get a passing grade on that part of it. Because again, the more you watch New Japan, it's got a little bit of some of the late 80s, early 90s NWA stuff in it. It's got a lot of fundamentally sound Mid-South wrestling stuff. The talents work very snug. They're very physical. That's what Bill Watts always demanded. So I grew up calling a product that had many of the same qualities that New Japan has. They have obviously more whistles and bells and more sizzle. And, of course, being in the Tokyo Dome is going to be a unique atmosphere. So, but you think about things like that, you know, communication, because you don't want to get out there and you're on an island to yourself, essentially, you and your partner. Or, you know, I don't know how that's all going to work. I don't know who's going to be talking to us, if they're going to speak broken English or good English, or we have nobody talking to us, and we just go. You know, I'm expecting all kinds of adventures in the production side. So my biggest concern is from a production standpoint, not the actual calling of the matches. I do want to, and I'm working on it, I want to make sure that I have all the pronunciations of the names correctly. That's a big thing. I don't want to half-ass it there, and talent recognition. You know, I've watched a lot of products, and I certainly am trying to, get familiar with the guys, the talents, wrestlers. So there are a lot of things are on my mind. Interfacing with a new partner, that's another challenge. But a lot of it goes back to the communication with the truck and the people that are talking to you in your headset. It may be a cool deal. It may be something where I don't have, I'm not overproduced, and that'd be good. That way there's no excuses. Just, you know, hey, you didn't do well or you did do well. So we'll see. But there's a lot of things that you gotta take in consideration when you're doing a show in another country, in a language that, one doesn't understand, which I certainly don't, obviously. I don't do real well in English, so Japanese is way off my radar, above my pay grade. So there's a lot of things you gotta figure out, but the main thing, let's just get on the air and then let our natural instincts take over and try to do the product justice. I really believe that there's so many devout New Japan fans that I know that I'll be scolded after the show by some on Twitter or whatever because I didn't call a hole the right name, or, you know, you see somebody do something and, How many names can you name for the Rainmaker?
Oh, right, of course. It's,
what I mean? There's more than one that's acceptable.
Well, you're also, Jim, talking about a product that for so long, it's like it's been the underground cool thing, and now it's on a bigger platform, and I think without question, you're going to have that fan base that's like, well, now everyone's in on our secret, and I think that you're naturally going to get, you could pull off the greatest job in the world, there will be that criticism because now it's fans that are watching for the first time, and that goes into my next question of who you are broadcasting for. Certainly there is the diehard New Japan fan that watches every single event, but this is going to be going to a lot of people that have probably, at least not in a long time, watched New Japan, if at all.
Well, my philosophy in broadcasting is you always broadcast to the lowest common denominator of information. So that would be then my answer to your question would be I would broadcast to the new folks watching New Japan, maybe for the first time, or, you know, maybe they never watched it before in English, a whole show. I don't know. But there's your target audience. The ones, the diehards that know every single thing, know Tanahashi's birthday and, you know, who's dated and or who's married to or whatever. They already know all that stuff. I can't out-trivia those guys, and I'm not trying to, and Striker won't try to, but the issue there is you broadcast to the audience that, assuming the audience needs information. And I told Jeff and Stryker last night, I said, you know, we have to, this is going to be a solid piece of infotainment. We've got to be entertaining. We've got to be respectful of the genre. I want to call it like a big sporting event, like a Grey Cup or a Super Bowl or, the cup, for hockey.
Oh, the Stanley Cup.
Stanley Cup, yeah, God.
you're going to upset some Canadians here, JR.
Not intentionally. They have to understand, I'm an old guy. But I think that you got to broadcast to, you got to know who you're going to broadcast to. That's a good question. And my view is that we broadcast to, the new fans and the diehards that have all the information that's got to, you know, they got to hang with us. We're repeating things they know, then, you know, too bad. But the main thing is that once the bell rings, we hope to have all the background information done in those long entrances so we can lay out who these guys are in a biographical way, why this match is happening, why it's important, you know, all that stuff. And then once the bell rings, we should have our table set to call a match because the game started. And if you're calling the Stanley Cup and there's a live, the puck is live and you're engaged in a period, you're not talking about extemporaneous things very much. You're talking about what you're seeing in the game. And then you can use the intermissions to catch everybody up, all the little nuts and bolts and things of that nature. So that's kind of how I'm looking at it. You know, the entrances are going to be used for information. And if we get the information in to lay out and let you enjoy the ambiance of the entrance. I don't think this show needs to be called wall to wall. We're not doing radio like we're doing today. We're going to be doing television, and some things, sometimes you just need a good layout is timely. I've always said sometimes good announcers know what not to say as well as what to say. And so that's kind of what I'm hoping that how we work this show out. But the target will be the new fans. So it's our job to tell the new fans who these people are and why you should have an interest in them. The who, what, when, and where has got to be documented. So I know there's going to be a lot of folks that watch New Japan for the first time, so it's our obligation as broadcasters to make sure that they know who they're looking at and why.
Just a few more minutes here, Jim. As you kind of reflect on this past year for yourself, I mean, it's really remarkable when you look back. You launched the podcast, you did boxing, you did mixed martial arts, you're returning to pro wrestling on January the 4th. Is this the kind of schedule? I know you're working on a book now. Is this a schedule you're happy with this amount? Is it, does your wife think it's too much, perhaps? I know you, it's probably not enough.
No, she does. She's worried that I'm going to get sucked back into a crazy pace and a insane schedule like I have had essentially since we met. We met while I was in WCW, and I was formatting TV shows, producing interviews, doing commentary. I was a VP of broadcasting. You know, I was on the booking committee. You know, I did Atlanta Falcon football. I did the talk show and a big radio station there locally in Atlanta, WSB. So I was busy all the time. And I didn't really intend to get as busy as I am, but I keep saying, and she understands, everything I'm doing, I enjoy. Everything I'm doing doesn't seem like work. So I don't dread that, okay, packing, here we go again, got to go the road again. No, I'm kind of looking forward to this trip. You know, I got my seat picked out for my plane flight. I'm ready to roll, man. In that regard, I'm prepared, and I am excited about these opportunities. But probably we'll see how the workload looks in 2015. I got to finish this book. It's a labor of love at this point, where you hate to almost give it up, and because I'm still editing and working on that, and we're still writing. So I really want to finish that book by late spring, early summer, and let my agent shop it around, because we do this thing entirely different on the book side. Not to digress, but it's an interesting concept. We kind of took the role of Oklahoma oil wildcatters. They were guys that would get a lease on land and dig wells just on the come. if there was oil there, then they had a good payday. If there wasn't oil there, they had a hit a dry hole. They lost a bunch of money. So our deal is we don't have a book publishing deal yet. We are going to write a good book the way I want to write it. It's not going to be edited by someone else with an agenda. It's going to be, you know, the publisher can edit it, but we've got to keep the same context. But I want it to be the way I wanted to do it. If you're writing your autobiography, you got to kind of be happy with it. You're only doing it once, which I am. But I'm working on that, and I got a couple of shows coming up in January on Royal Rumble weekend.
Yes.
One in Jersey on the 23rd, and one in Philly on the day of the Royal Rumble, 25th of January at 3 o'clock. So I'm going to try to do a few more shows, because that's the fun part of that stuff. But she's a little worried that I'm getting too deep. You know, the thing about this deal with Jared is I signed a one-off deal. I got no other wrestling events booked with anybody after the January 4th deal. I'm looking at January 4th could very well be the last time I do an entire show of pro wrestling. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know what the future holds for that brand. You know, the pay-per-view's got to do well, obviously. I hope Jeff's brand grows and hope this thing is successful. But the pay-per-view's got to do well to perpetuate the building of that product. So, you know, we're just going to kind of wait and see on that deal. So I'm really going into this pay-per-view with a great sense of urgency. I don't want to suck pond water, and I don't want to bomb. I want it to be a really good show. So if that is my last one, I could say at least we went out with something memorable. And then, but gosh, you're right. I got a lot of projects, and you know, I'm trying to get our all of our condiments, our sauces into Canada, and we were close on some deals, I understand, with our manufacturer, but try to hit a grocery store chain or a food wholesaler there to distribute our products, things like that that don't really aren't exciting. I find myself occupied in that area a lot, so that's kind of off the radar. So I stay busy about all the time, but a lot of it I can do from here at my house, and so I kind of get a pass on that deal. But these, I don't think I'll be making a lot of trips to Tokyo. I don't think the bride's probably going to embrace that idea. But she can go with me, then she might have a different take on it.
Well, Wrestle Kingdom 9, it is coming up on here in North America on January the 3rd. You can watch it live at 2 a.m. Eastern time late on Saturday night, and then it's got a primetime showing at 7 p.m. on January the 4th. Available on pay-per-view, including here in Canada. You can also watch it on the Flips app. Jim Ross and Matt Stryker having the call, headlined by Hiroshi Tanahashi and Kazuchika Okada. Kota Ibushi taking on Shinsuke Nakamura. It's a solid lineup. And, of course, you can catch the Ross Report. It drops Tuesday nights on Podcast One. And he is on Twitter, at JRSBBQ. And, JR, the next time you're up in Toronto, me and Wei, we are going to take you to Electric Mud. And we will return for some barbecue on us.
That was a good spot. I mean, I would think it's one of those deals where it's kind of like one of those best-kept secrets. Electric Mud. They had good food. And I know barbecue. I've just eaten smoked meat all my life. But they did a great job, so it's good. I hope that we get to play Toronto again, and we can, I've always enjoyed coming up there. So many friends, and Ontario's always treated me very well. And I need to play. You know, I get all the time asked, are you going to play Montreal? Are you going to play when you come back to Toronto? You know, I need to get our people that are working on these scheduling things to get me more Canadian dates, and because of the audience there, they've been very loyal and very kind to me over the years. So hopefully we'll get to do that, and we'll get to work together again and move on. And maybe one of these days we'll be setting up the broadcast together, John. You never know.
Oh, who knows? You never say never in this profession.
No, you don't. You never say never, and never. Hey, you just keep those bridges clear and healthy. And that's what I've realized is that, you know, I want to do projects that are fun and don't feel like I'm going to work. And that's kind of why I think maybe I'm so busy right now. I'm having a lot of fun. So now I may change my tune on that flight back from Tokyo. I may be some god of my tire. You know, so it'll be good. It'll be a fun show. And I'm looking forward to Wrestle Kingdom 9. I think it's going to be good. It's going to be an adventure. And when you do live TV, it's there for everybody to hear. So, you know, no net. So I like that. I like that adrenaline rush you get from no net. And
if nothing else, it's a chapter in the book.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be good.
All right. Well, Jay, I want to thank you so much. Again, a Merry Christmas from both Wei and I, and thank you so much for stopping by. It was great, and we're going to be watching. Me and Wei are watching it live here at 2 a.m. We're going to be watching.
That doesn't surprise me. somebody asked me the other day, if you wanted to watch the show and you weren't going to be on it, would you watch it live? And I said, absolutely. I would not want to, because going online, just turning your phone on ruins it. Because you get all the spoiler information, you get all the spoiler I call the Jardines, after Don Jardine, the spoiler.
Yeah.
I don't read the Jardines very much. I don't like them. But it would ruin the show if you do everything about it before you watched it. Why would you watch it? I mean, it takes so much of the sauce off of it. It's just not good. So I hope that, I hope you guys enjoy it, and I'll be thinking about you, staying up late night watching our show, and maybe we'll give you good enough commentary that you won't fall asleep on us.
Oh, I think we'll make it through. We're both looking forward to it. So enjoy the trip, JR. It's going to be a hell of a show on January the 4th. Just a loaded lineup. So
thanks, guys. Happy holidays, happy New Year, and I really value our friendship. So appreciate all the help, and look forward to seeing you again in Toronto sooner than later.